the face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
That was President George W. Bush addressing the Islamic Center of Washington, D.C., just less than a week after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Well, was President Bush right then 3 years ago when he said that Islam is peace? Are those who say that today, are they right? What is the track record of this world religion, Islam, in terms of terrorism and violence and war, historically, and many other things? Human rights, the freedom of religion, the separation of church and state. Do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? It's a very fundamental question. We'll be answering it in the course of this hour of Issues Etc. with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the new book called The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us. Issues Etc. is a live call-in program. We're coming to you live this Sunday night, September the 12th. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. We also have our forum back up and running. That should be happy news for many of you. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll find the Issues Etc. forum there waiting for your questions and your comments on Islam in tonight's program. We'll be getting to those questions and comments as time permits in this two-hour conversation. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's a regular guest here on Issues Etc., professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College in Jacksonville, Illinois, and author of the new book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back. Dr. Schmidt, welcome. We'll have Dr. Schmidt with us here in just a moment. Feel free to give us a call, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or our Issues Etc. forum is always waiting there, and it's back up again, waiting for your questions and your comments. And that's at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section, you'll find the forum there. We're going to be talking about Islam. Some of the other questions we're going to be dealing with is that pesky historical question of the Crusades. Serious business. What really took place during the Christian Crusades? Was it a Christian invasion of the Islamic and the Eastern world? We're going to be answering that question. What really took place? What instigated those Crusades? Why is it also that Western Muslims, by and large, appear to be peaceful lovers of democracy, whereas when we look into the Islamic world, democracy does not flourish and peace seems to be in short supply? All of those questions will be answered here during this hour. Dr. Alvin Schmidt, welcome to Issues Etc.
My pleasure to be with you again.
Let's get a reaction, first of all, to what President Bush said in our open. He said Islam is peace and that terrorism is not the true face of Islam. Your reaction to President Bush's assessment?
Well, I even specifically addressed that particular quotation plus a couple of others from public officials, including, you know, the Prime Minister of England and previous people in the previous administration under Clinton. And I say, obviously, clearly, these people have not read the Quran, much less the 9 volumes of about 500 pages each of the Hadith or the 1,200 pages of the Sharia law. The Muslim religion has been historically documented a religion of violence and war from the day of Muhammad on. For 1,400 years, it's been a trail of blood behind them. And to say that they're a religion of peace is just simply doesn't square with the facts. One would wish that these people who say that would sit down and read the Quran, because it's filled with violent passages. I cite 35 in the appendix. I could have cited 100 that are there, all in the present tense. And so in addition to that, all the bloodshed and the carnage that has happened with the Muslim sword from the early 700s on, with starting with Muhammad, have been the history of Islam. To call it the religion of peace is just simply almost saying like water runs uphill.
So in a nutshell, how would you characterize the relationship between the modern-day reality, which is terrorism? How would you characterize the relationship between terrorism and the religion Islam?
Well, the people who are called terrorists are basically true Muslims. They're taking the Quran and the Hadith very, very seriously. And those who are not taking them seriously, and I don't know how many there are, and I don't really know who they are, even in our society, the sounds of silence on the part of so-called moderate Muslims or who are not radical Muslims have been rather deafening. So these people who are called radical Muslims or extremists are following the Quran basically quite seriously, and they can't be accused of distorting the Quran. A moderate Muslim might be accused of ignoring it. How many do, I do not know. But that is basically the way it is. And so the terrorists are, you might say, true Muslims.
Why is it that Western Muslims, I'm talking about Muslims who live in the Western world, Western Europe, the United States, by and large appear to be peaceful and lovers of freedom and democracy, whereas in the Islamic world, democracy does not flourish, peace is in short supply, and as well as freedom?
Well, for example, two answers, I guess. One, when they're peaceful, it's because they are in a minority and don't really have the authority or would not do too well if they engaged in violence. And on the other hand, we have seen that violence now, however, is happening in the West as it did in our own country just 3 years ago, and is happening in other parts of the world. So things in that regard seem to be changing. Even when they are a minority, they are beginning to resort to violence, not just when they have control and are able to do what their Sharia law dictates.
So are you saying that Muslims in the Western world are acting, at least in some part, failing to act in accord with the tenets of their religion when they behave in a, by and large, peaceful manner in their
communities? Yes, because the Quran is very specific. So is the Hadith, for example, in terms of, you know, that they're supposed to fight, engage in jihad, to fight the non-Muslims, the infidels. Let me just read a few passages that say very clearly, and kill them wherever you find them, and drive them out from whence they drove you out. And here's those are from the appendix of the book that I'm reading. And another way, and fight in the way of Allah, and know that Allah is hearing, knowing. And again, if you are slain in the way of Allah or you die, certainly forgiveness from Allah and mercy is better than what they amass. Another one says, for example, then seize them and kill them wherever you find them, and take not from among them a friend or a helper. And so it goes on. I don't have, obviously, time to read all 35 in the appendix, but this gives you a pretty good indication of what the Quran tells them to do. I might mention it's in the imperative. It's in the present tense. So they are following the Quran, and others, if they're peaceful, are really not following it.
But you know, Dr. Schmidt, people can pull out passages from the Christian scriptures, from the Old Testament, where God commands what appears to be the brutal death of men, women, and children. They can pull them out and say, look, there you go, Christianity is also a religion of violence.
Well, a couple of comments. I'm glad you brought that up. First of all, those violent passages, war passages that one finds in the Old Testament, for example, in the book of Joshua and the like, first of all, are 3,000 years old. They are no longer being resorted to. Nobody in Israel, no Christian, cites those passages in terms of engaging in violence and defending violence if they were to engage in it. Whereas in the Quran, these are in the present tense. They are active for today. They're not past history. Another thing to mention is that there isn't a single passage in the entire New Testament that talks or about Christians engaging in violence. In fact, Jesus said the very opposite. Someone man swipes, hits you on the cheek, turn him the other cheek. When Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane engaged in violence by taking a sword and lopping off one of the guard's ears, Jesus said, "If Peter, if you're going to live that way, you're going to die that way." And so Christianity does not advocate violence. And so when these Old Testament passages are resurrected, it's basically what one might call a political or a red herring issue to lead people off the path from seeing the true, real nature of what the Quran teaches, for example.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about Islam this evening. I would like you to join us. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. As I said before, our Issues Etc. forum is back up and running, and we're ready to take your questions and your comments there at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find the forum there. Post a question or a comment for Dr. Alvin Schmidt in the course of this conversation on Islam. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College in Jacksonville, Illinois. He is author of the new book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Now, when we come back, we're going to take up the thorny issue of the Crusades. If you talk about violence and Islam, one must look back into history. One of the most violent clashes that Islam undertook, it included Christianity, were the Crusades. What were those violent clashes in the Near East and the ancient East? What were they really all about? What were the Crusades? Were they a Christian invasion of the Islamic world, or were they an Islamic invasion of the Christian world? We'll be answering those questions, and we'll be hearing a popular opinion voiced recently by independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader on the issue of the Crusades, and we'll have Dr. Alvin Schmidt's reaction to it as well. Your reaction to anything we're talking about with regard to Islam tonight, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Folks, Issues Etc. regular guests Drs. Arthur Just and Gene Edward Veith will be just two of several presenters at the 5th Annual Good Shepherd Institute Conference on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, this annual conference offers many opportunities to equip both the clergy and lay people to better serve their congregations through music and the ministry of the Word. For more information, check out the website for Concordia Theological Seminary. Here it is, www.ctsfw.edu, www.ctsfw.edu, or call them toll-free at 1-877-287-4334. Tell them that you want information on the Good Shepherd Institute Conference, November the 7th through the 9th this year, 1-877-287-4334. Dr. Schmidt, recently independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader voiced what is a very popular opinion about the Christian Crusades. Here's Ralph Nader.
Between 1095 and the following 200 years, armies from Christendom moved in to Asia Minor and the Middle East, slaughtering as they go. In one conflict, the Christian general took out 2,500 Muslim prisoners and beheaded them.
Dr. Schmidt, what were the Christian Crusades about? Your reaction to this very popular conception of what they were in essence?
Yeah, it's largely a myth, and Nader is parroting it. Had he done a little bit more research, he would have found out the story is quite different. In fact, for most of my life, I more or less believed what Nader was just saying, because this is what we read in history books, whether it's in high school or college or level. You read, for example, this one-sided, distorted history. And this is why I have a chapter in the book titled The Crusades and the Rest of the Story. Let me just explain a little bit in more detail. The Crusades, when they began in 1095, as Nader said, they were begun after the Muslims had for 400 years attacked the West Europe, had invaded Spain in 711, occupied it until 1492. So 1095, they were still in the midst of being in control of Spain, where they demolished hundreds of churches and killed many Christians and Jews. Then they also engaged in other battles. And so in 1095, the Eastern Emperor by the name of Alexius appealed to Pope Urban II to come to their defense. In other words, to save Christianity from being totally wiped out by the Muslims. And so the Christians went to war with the Crusades in early 1096. As I mentioned in the book, it was not for the Pope to call those Crusades into being. It should have been a state leader, but be that as it may. When they did begin, they began, and even a person like Bernhard Lewis, a retired Princeton professor, who has written a lot of books on Islam, and many of them quite favorably, although nevertheless quite objectively in most cases, said when the Crusades began, the Christians merely wanted to take back territory that once was theirs in the area of what we would call the Middle East or Palestine or Israel. So that rest of the story is never told. In fact, I'm sure Nader has never heard it either, if he confines his reading to the college or high school textbooks. And so there is that particular story. Obviously, when the Crusades got underway, there were evils that were done, as always happens in war, not that that justifies them. Many of the evil things that were done on the part of Crusaders were probably what I call nominal or pseudo-Christians who went along for the ride, to speak. And in addition to that, a current scholar, for example, today in England by the name of Jonathan Riley Smith, an expert, for example, in the Crusades, has recently said in the book that the Crusades were a just war applied to, and the just war principle applied to the Crusades no less than to any other war. There's a historian right in St. Louis by the name of Thomas Madden, who has written about the Crusades in a rather objective way, showing that what we read in the history books is not the whole story. In fact, very much distorted. It's also interesting when we talk about the Crusades that until about the mid-1800s, the Muslims themselves never saw the Crusades in the light as they're pictured today. And largely that came about as a result of some Western historians who, for some reason or another, had a dislike for Christianity. One of them was Edward Gibbon, who wrote The Decline and the Fall of the Roman Empire, who wrote his major six volumes around the time of the American Revolution in the 1770s. And so you have this line parroted by people, and by the way, Edward Gibbons, the writer of The Fall and Decline of Roman Empire, was a fallen away Christian, and for some reason or another, as so frequently happens, they rebel, if you will, and say things against that which they rebel and put it in history books. And then people in the Muslim Arab world have picked up on this theme of the Crusaders, which today is always a negative term and one that is primarily applied to Christianity. But as I point out in the book from a number of authorities, until the 1850s, the Muslims never saw the Crusades as they are portrayed today.
Dr. Schmidt, tell us about the historical human rights record, if you could put it in those terms, of Islam as a religion, where it has gone, beginning with things, something basic like basic human rights, the freedom of religion, how women were treated. We've got 2 minutes before this break.
Oh, yeah. The way women are treated is an interesting thing. Again, I have a whole chapter dealing with that, how women are oppressed. For instance, in Surah 4, Surah equivalent of a chapter in the Quran, it tells a husband that he may beat his wives, not singular, but plural. Or even if he has a single wife, he may do so. A Muslim woman may marry only one man. A man may marry four women. A Muslim man may marry a non-Muslim woman. A Muslim woman may never marry a non-Muslim man. A Muslim woman has to go to the mosque and pray behind the man. She is portrayed as a sexual object, a field in which a man, you know, does his plowing, so to speak, if I may use that word. And Muhammad himself said that he saw most women in hell. In other words, hell is overpopulated by women. Then there is the practice of clitoridectomy, often known as female genital mutilation. It is estimated in the 1990s, 6,000 girls a day in Egypt often suffered. Many of them died from this particular operation. There is the problem of osteomalacia, which is bone softening that often happens as a result of women being totally clad and not getting any sunshine, or if you will, vitamin D, for the good of their bones. And the list goes on. And that's just the oppression, if you will, of human rights that are denied to women.
When we come back from this break, let's take up some of the other issues swirling around human rights. We'll talk about the freedom of religion. Is there such a thing? We will find out on the other side of the break. Even resembling the separation of church and state, or mosque and state, if you will, under Islam. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College in Jacksonville, author of the new book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. You can order this book by calling Regina Orthodox Press, toll-free. Here's the number, 1-800-636-2470, 1-800-636-2470. Ask for the book, The Great Divide, by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Now, for next month through October the 15th, The Great Divide, this book by Dr. Schmidt, is being offered for $5 off the regular price, 1-800-636-2470. Or you can find out more about the book at Amazon.com. Amazon.com. The book is called The Great Divide by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. When we come back, we're going to take up that question of the freedom of religion and the separation of mosque and state. Why is it that in the Islamic world we find the imams, the clergy, if you will, calling the shots, and how important is it for us to understand this element of Islam in order to understand its place in the world and the challenge it presents to us? We'll be right back. Arthur Just, Larry Rast, Carl Fickencher. All regular guests on Issues Etc., but they're also members of the faculty at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And you can learn firsthand from these professors at one of the excellent fall retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. For information, call Concordia Theological Seminary toll-free 1-877-287-4338 or visit their website www.ctsfw.edu. Take a few days from your hectic schedule and be refreshed and energized with excellent instruction and the company of people who wish to expand their horizons. For more information on a fall retreat at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, call 877-287-4338 or go to www.ctsfw.edu. 1-877-287-4338.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with Dr. Dean Wenthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Wenthy, how is Concordia Theological Seminary unique?
Our birthright, as it were, is the Christ's presence and his gifts. At the center of all we do here is our confession and worship of Christ and the Holy Trinity. so that more than being simply an academic institution, we're a worshiping institution. We gather as those baptized into Christ. We hear the living voice of Christ through the Scriptures, and we attend His holy table where He gives us His very body and blood. And I think every other aspect of our life together in community, in academic work, in practical and outreach missions, flows from that time around font and altar, where we again hear the saving and truthful word of Christ, and then go forth to share it and to learn how to share it with the whole world. If you look over the Christian landscape, classic Lutheran theology is not frequently held up in its sacramental fullness and in its the beauty of scriptural witness. And that's our conviction, that by doing this, we may be unique, but we believe we're doing the very best we can for our fellow human beings in holding up Christ and Him crucified with scriptural clarity and with the sacramental gifts that He has bestowed upon His people.
So are you excited about the future of Concordia Theological Seminary?
In every way. I can't believe the blessings that we have been given, as we Lutherans say, not with any merit or worthiness on our part, but by God's grace, He continues to lead talented, dedicated men and women to give their lives to Him and to the truth of the gospel. And I'd like to invite any of your listeners to come and visit us, but more than visit, worship with us, be my guest for a campus tour, and see how our life revolves around this wonderful truth that the incarnate Christ has brought to our world.
That's Dr. Dean Winthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, call them toll-free at 1-877-287-4338 or visit them on the web at www.ctsfw.edu.
I guess you've probably seen the healing services on television, but do these faith healers have a biblical understanding of faith and healing? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is titled Order Restored, A Biblical Interpretation of Health, Medicine, and Healing. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Order Restored costs $20.99, plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Order Restored on our website, issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. How important are faith, attitude, and community in healing and wellness? Find out with Order Restored, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September. 1-800-325-3040. Or look it up on issuesetc.org.
One of many instances, as you know, in the recent history by terrorists who have done so in the name of Islam. And like we've said before, we'll say it again, they do not reflect our values, they do not reflect our religion. In fact, everything they do oppose is in opposition with what Islam stands for.
That was a representative of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, reacting to the beheading in Iraq of Nick Berg. We're talking about Islam with Dr. Alvin Schmidt during this hour of Issues, Etc. Next week on the program, we're going to discuss healing with Pastor Mark Sell of Concordia Publishing House. Do modern-day faith healers have a biblical understanding of faith and healing? We'll answer that question and others next week with Pastor Mark Sell. Now, we're going to be basing next week's program, Issues, Etc., on our Book of the Month for September. It's called Order Restored, A Biblical Interpretation of Health, Medicine, and healing. The book is a compendium of what Scripture teaches, Old and New Testament, about illness and the restoration of order that we call healing. And it is Christ-centered and cross-focused. Now, you can purchase Order Restored online at our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The book costs $20.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. When you call or write, tell them that you want the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Order Restored. Dr. Schmidt, let's turn to the issue of the freedom of religion under Islam, and let's go at it from the vantage point of whether or not Islam recognizes any separation between the state and the mosque.
Absolutely no. In fact, you might say, as I do in the book, that the mosque and the state are like Siamese twins of Islam. There is no separation of church and state. Bernard Lewis, whom I referred to a little while ago, in one of his writings says, in the traditional Islamic order, there is in principle no secular law, but only the God-given holy law of Islam, end of quote. And so, no, there is no separation of church and state. In fact, that is seen in Islamic eyes as a Western Christian heresy. And history shows that they have not had any separation of church and state. You have some of it, a little bit of it, if you might, in Turkey in the 1920s. A person by the name of Mustafa Kemal, often better known as Ataturk, meaning the father of the Turks, introduced a separation of religion from the state. But not in the sense as we understand it today. You don't have the freedom in Turkey as you have in our country. We have it enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution, for example. And it goes all the way back, as more scholars have indicated, to the statement of Jesus when he was about to be tricked by the Pharisees in terms of whether people should give or pay taxes to the Roman emperor. And so he said, give me a coin whose inscription is on it. And they said, Caesar's. And Jesus replied, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God what belongs to God. That has been classically seen, and I think correctly so, as laying the foundation for the separation of church and state. And it's been also that which has given a great deal of freedom. It is very difficult to imagine freedom where there is no separation of church and state. The fusion of religion and the state began in the Islamic circles with Muhammad in the 620s. This is ardently defended today, for example, in the Sharia law. Sharia law tops all other laws. It is the holy law of Islam, and there is no separation of church and state. For example, if you were to say anything that is seen as negative relative to Muhammad or the Quran, you, in fact, under Sharia law, are subject to a capital offense, in other words, to be executed. And so, no, the separation of church and state is a, you might say, a Christian contribution that we in the West have practiced for a long, long time, in some countries more so than in others. But in Islamic countries, it is absolutely not permitted. And if you were ever to have true separation of church and law, I mean church and state or mosque and state, Muslim or the Islamic religion would suffer. For example, in Muslim theology, the church is the state and the state is the church, or the church is the mosque and the mosque is the state. And that is a cardinal principle of Islamic theology.
With all of that said and everything that's come before, how would you answer the question, do Christians and Muslims worship the same God?
No, of course not. And let me say that in the following words. First of all, Christians worship the triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, which is number one blasphemy in the eyes of any informed Muslim. God, in fact, they see us worshiping the Trinity as polytheism. In addition to that, we do not worship the same God, because Muslims, in the Quran itself, denies that Jesus Christ was crucified. And if you deny he was crucified, you also deny that he was resurrected. Both of those are the pillars of Christianity. And we do not worship the same God in another sense, because Muslims do not, true informed Muslims, do not see Allah equal sign God. God and Allah are not the same. Now, that is, impression is often given to people, either intentionally or unintentionally. Let me illustrate how this can be demonstrated. A few weeks after 9/11, when the national gathering took place in the Washington Cathedral, and he had an imam giving a few words and prayer, and when he prayed, he very distinctly prayed to Allah. He did not say God. This was an open admission, although I'm not sure many people caught it, that Muslims do not pray to the same God. In fact, one of the persons, an ex-Muslim who's endorsed my book on the back of the cover, now a university professor, once was engaged in a debate with Muslims in a rather large gathering. And so finally he point blankly asked the person he was debating, do Muslims believe in the same God that we as Christians believe? And he said, absolutely no. So I think that pretty much answers the question.
Our call in number 1-800-730-2727. Muslim callers will get top priority. 1-800-730-2727. In the few minutes before this break, Dr. Schmidt, let's go to the phones and talk with Chris, who listens on KSIV here in St. Louis. Chris, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi there. I had just a quick question. I was wanting to know, I know the Muslims believe that in the Quran it says that Allah had no son, and I was wanting to know as regards to the virgin birth, who do they think Jesus is as far as Christians believe that it's God become man in the virgin birth, but if the virgin birth happened, and according to the Muslims, which they believe, then who was his father?
Chris, thank you very much. It's a good question. Dr. Schmidt?
That who was Jesus' father?
Who was Jesus, if they deny the virgin birth, if they do?
And they really don't quite deny the virgin birth. That they don't do, to my knowledge,
so
according
at
least to the Quran.
They affirm that Jesus is born of a virgin. Who would they say that God is Jesus' father in the same sense that Christians would say?
I don't know. They've never seen any specific reference to answer that question in those words. I kind of have to leave that unanswered. It's a good question, but I do not know a specific answer, and I've never seen one.
Well, let's see if we could go at it this way. Would they affirm that Jesus Christ is divine?
No. Jesus is a prophet. They will say that over and over again, but he is a lesser prophet in comparison to Muhammad. And he is only a prophet. He is only an apostle. He is not God, and he is not even the Son of God, because that in itself is blasphemy in Islamic theology.
So the most we can say from what a informed Muslim would believe is that Jesus is a lesser prophet, born of a virgin, but not the Son of God, and certainly not divine.
That's right. And when they say we believe, you know, not so long ago, a friend of mine was at a service club gathering where he, for example, heard the speaker say, well, we also believe that Jesus was a prophet. And it seems like 9 times out of 10, the people who are ostensibly Christians sit back and think, oh, there isn't much difference. Well, there are a couple of things that need to be noted. First of all, Jesus' role was not first and foremost to be a prophet. That was one of his roles. But his first and foremost role was not, for example, to bring revelation of the Word. He was the Word. He was, for example, the incarnation. So you see that Jesus was, and when they say we honor him as a prophet, they're really, well, what shall I say, not being truthful and honest, either intentionally or unintentionally. And the similar passage, a similar statement is sometimes heard, and it occurred a couple of weeks after the 9/11 incident in the Willow Creek Church up in Barrington, Illinois. They had an imam speak.
With 30 seconds, Dr. Schmidt.
And he said, we honor Jesus more than you do. Well, that again is very, very wrong and false and misleading. How can you honor Jesus more if you deny the crucifixion and his resurrection?
Folks, we have several articles on the subject of Islam posted at our website, including one written by our guest in this hour, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. The website address, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section, and you'll find these resources on Islam. We're going to be taking your phone calls when we come back from this break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Or visit our Issues Etc. forum. We've reopened it. It's at our website, issuesetc.org, under the What's New section. Post your questions and your comments there. We'll take your phone calls on Islam with Dr. Alvin Schmidt right after this.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is looking for one member from each Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation to become our official lay representative. Responsibilities simply involve promotion of Issues Etc. in your local church. Now, if you're interested, leave your name, phone number, and mailing address, and your congregation's name, city, and state on our automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you'd like to receive a complimentary copy of our next Issues Etc. journal, or if you'd like to become our Issues Etc. lay representative in your local Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation, or if you'd like to help us defend the faith and teach the truth by joining our Reformation Club, it's our monthly donor program. Call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. That's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Back to the phones, listening on WEMI in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Tim, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Good evening.
What's your question or comment, Tim?
Is Ishmael, that's mentioned in Genesis in the Bible, does he have anything to do with the current problems that the people in Israel and the Islamic people currently have today?
Tim, thank you for the question. This is one of those things that's often asked, Dr. Schmidt, about the possible biblical roots of the Palestinian-Israeli question.
I mean, I couldn't quite hear everything. Did he say Ishmael?
Yeah, he asked about whether or not Ishmael could help explain the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that sometimes involves Muslims and sometimes doesn't.
That's right. That's a good point to make that you just made. Well, commonly many people say that the Arabs are descendants of Ishmael, although there's a lot of scholarly work that denies that. So I don't quite know where the truth lies. But that is basically what I think in popular belief among Arabs, whether they're Muslims or not, is believed. And I guess that's about where I have to leave the question. I mean, the history of descendancies and the like since Ishmael type, and even from Ishmael's time on, are just too amorphous, if I may use that word, to really be concrete, positive about whether Arabs are descendants. Now, if you argue about Muslims being descendants, well, that in a sense removes you another step, because now you're talking about a religion that came, you know, a lot later than the Arab societies. But there were so many tribes in that part of the world that it's difficult to say which ones descended from Ishmael and which ones did not.
And we should say Islam is a religion that is not only practiced by Arab peoples or Arabic-speaking peoples, but by people throughout the world.
That's right.
Regardless of race. Ajmal listens in Centerville, Virginia, and he listens on WAVA. Ajmal, welcome.
Thank you. My question to you, Dr. Schmidt, is earlier in the show you said that that Islam is not a religion of peace, and that you know, by nature, the true Muslims are supposed to be violent, and that those who don't practice violence are not necessarily Muslims. Now, I mean, really, that is probably one of the most ignorant things I've ever heard in all the years that I've been listening to this show and everything that I've heard on TV and everything. I mean, how can you possibly believe that you, as an educated man?
Well, read the Quran. All the violent passages, and if I'm going to ask the average Muslim, do you believe the Quran? And if he says yes, it would include the violent passages, right?
Ajmal has left us, Dr. Schmidt. But your response, I mean, you said if you're consistent with the Quran,
right,
then violence will be part and parcel of the religion. Make the case again.
I beg your pardon?
Make the case again that if you're consistent with the Quran.
If you are a true believing Muslim, which would mean you believe the Quran, not part of it, but all of it, then of course you have to say, I believe those violent passages which are stated in the imperative form. Kill the unbeliever. And I read a few of them before. The book has 35 listed in the appendix. I could have listed another 70. But, you know, I thought 35 should serve the case. Now, people will say Islam's a religion of peace, but even apart from the Quran, we don't even need the Quran. Just take a look at the history of what they did, beginning with, for example, Muhammad himself. What did Muhammad do? He participated in 27 battles himself, and he planned in 39 others. He himself engaged in killing people. Let me just give a few examples. One time, for example, there was a poetess in his circle who made a negative poem about him, and so he prayed, "Who will rid me of this woman?" Well, a sycophant took it upon himself at night to go to her place when she was asleep with a baby on her breast, removed the baby, stabbed her in the chest, came back, and he got praises from Allah. And there was another time, for example, that when Muhammad captured the Banu Qurayza group, basically a Jewish group, in 627, about 2,000 people, out of which there were about 700-800 men, and the rest were women and children. The next day, trenches were dug, and they took the 700, some scholars say 800, lined them up in the trenches, and then early in the morning began taking the sword and decapitated them and threw them in the trenches. This went on till the torches went light went on at night. There was another time, for example, a individual by the name of Ibn al-Sharf was executed, and the man who executed it for Muhammad brought it and tossed his head at Muhammad's feet and again received praises from him. But it's not just Muhammad that did this. It continued later on, for example, when the Muslims, the Berbers from northern Africa, invaded Spain in 711. And when, what's his name, Tariq ibn Zayed had captured Toledo, he had a number of prisoners taken captive, took some of them, killed them, cut their flesh off the bones, boiled them in the cauldron, and then released the other prisoners to spread the news what would happen to them if they didn't cooperate. Now, this is the trail of violence, and I cite many of them in the book. I'm not making these up. These are cited from the best historical facts, but just because people don't hear them on the television or in the news or in the newspaper, because it's politically incorrect to mention them, you can say all kinds of negative things about the Crusades, but don't say anything negative about what is true and factual relative to what happened under Islam authority. Don't forget also this. One of the major symbols of Islam is the sword. Don't forget also this, that Muhammad himself said, I am the last of the prophets and am sent with the sword. Well, I think I've made my case.
Folks, you can purchase Dr. Schmidt's new book called The Great Divide by calling 1-800-636-2470, 1-800-636-2470, or on the web at Amazon.com. We're coming to you live this Sunday night, September the 12th. We will be continuing to take your phone calls in the next hour on Islam, 1-800-730-2727. We're going to give away Dr. Schmidt's new book, The Great Divide, to the best callers in the next hour. And as said before, Muslim callers do get top priority. 1-800-730-2727. You can also post your questions or your comments on the Issues Etc. forum. Yes, it is back. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll be able to find the forum there. Be sure to tune in live in the next hour on the Internet. You won't be able to hear this next hour on the radio. It's only live on the Internet at our website, issuesetc.org. Simply click on the worldwide KFUO logo and listen to the next hour, issuesetc.org. 1-800-730-2727. If you're getting a busy signal, keep trying, because we'll be freeing up those phone lines as soon as we begin the next hour's conversation with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Keep calling during this break. 1-800-730-2727. The last caller mentioned ignorance. Now, I think that's probably what's at work more often than not. When we see a religion that has perpetrated violence, that has blurred, in fact, has no distinction between the clergy and the state, a religion that teaches that Christianity is false and yet still wants to embrace, as a prophet, Jesus Christ, the man who stands at the center of Christianity. Oh, he's born of a virgin. He's a great prophet. It seems also very honorific, but they deny who that prophet said he is. The prophet said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me." A prophet very different from the prophet of Muhammad. What we're dealing here, yes, is ignorance. Ignorance, perhaps in many cases, Muslims of their own religion, Muslims of Christianity. And what we hope to do during these 2 hours is to relieve some of the ignorance that Christians may also have about the true nature of Islam. Why? So that we can simply say bad things about the Islamic religion? No, that is not the purpose. Speak the truth about the Islamic religion so that the Muslim might not be ignorant of what his holy book teaches him, so that perchance, in hearing the truth of who Jesus Christ really is, the way, the truth, and the life, the crucified and risen Savior for all sinners, the God-man who took in his body our sins and bore them there at the tree so that we might have mercy before the true God, our Father in heaven, the Lord and God and Father of Jesus Christ himself. That's the purpose, to bring people out of darkness into the light of Jesus Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.